Live from the College of Communication, Arts and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Yes, it is about that time. You are now locked into WKAR's current sports here on this Monday, January 15th. 2018. Today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, a day where we reflect on how far we have come as a nation, how far we have come as a world, and just reflecting on just how, heck, here even in 2018, we are still fighting for total equality, right? So many things happening across our world, it seems, on the daily basis. But on this day, we remember a man who fought to get us to this point. We have come a long way. We still have some ways to go, without a doubt. But we have come a long way when it comes to equality here in America. And a lot of that having to do with the agenda that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. pushed when he, of course, was the head of the civil rights movement. We remember this man on this day, and in just a moment, as we've done now for the past 4 years here on WKAR's Current Sports, we will play a snippet from the famed I Have a Dream speech from Dr. King. But before we do that, and that's how we'll start today's show, as we, again, usually do here on this day. But before we do that, I want to give you guys an update, a preview of what we will be chatting about throughout this hour here live on WKAR AM 870 94.5 FM. On today's show, we will recap the wild weekend in divisional round action of the NFL playoffs. How crazy was particularly yesterday's action, right? Just a wild, wild day of football, in which we saw in the later game last night, the Minnesota Vikings absolutely stunned the New Orleans Saints. And folks, I have checked on former current sports engineer Isaac Constance, who is a diehard New Orleans professional sports fan. He's a diehard New Orleans Saints fan. And I checked on him last night after that thrilling Vikings win, and he's doing okay. He is doing okay. He was very angry, as you can imagine, very perturbed, but he is fine. All right, life does go on. So in just a moment, we'll actually be chatting with Jarrett Bell, NFL columnist for USA Today Sports, ESPN contributor as well. And, of course, Jarrett Bell is a graduate of Michigan State University. Jarrett will recap the divisional round playoff action from this past weekend. You don't want to miss his thoughts. A lot to cover there. And we'll also get an update as it pertains to the Detroit Lions head coaching situation. And it looks like Matt Patricia may be the guy after all. After all the talk last week about Patricia leaning towards the job with the New York Giants, looks like Matt Patricia may be the next head coach of the Lions. We'll chat with Bell about the likelihood of that and so much more. Also, with it being MLK Day, I'm excited to have this young woman here on our airwaves. Her name is Kenya Abbott Jr. She's a Michigan State grad and founder and host of a show entitled Politickin', an audience-driven talk show and web-based platform rooted in social justice dialogue. We will talk about how far we have come as a nation with Kenya, and we will talk about how much further we need to go as a nation with Kenya as well. And she'll talk about what politicking has in store for the new year. Looking forward to that interview as we divert from sports just a bit in segment B. And then on the back end of the show, we will, of course, talk about the Michigan State men's basketball team falling to the University of Michigan in a shocker. No one saw that loss coming. It was just a bad six-day stretch for Tom Izzo's team. They lose to Ohio State. Then they have to go to overtime to beat Rutgers. And then they just let the game slip away against Michigan one Saturday afternoon in front of a packed house at the Breslin Center. So we will try to answer the question, what exactly is wrong with the Michigan State men's basketball team and what needs to be fixed if this team wants to really be a legitimate national championship contender? Because right now, there are a lot of areas that are absent from this squad, and those areas were really put on blast on Saturday as the Wolverines come through with the big win. So, a lot to get to. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call if you would like to be a part of the show today. You can also join us via social media. The Facebook live stream is up and running at facebook.com/currentsports. You can comment below the live video, and I'll do my best to get to your comments throughout this hour. And you can tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin. WKAR is my Twitter handle, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. But hey, it's MLK Day, and we start with this riveting moment in American history.
I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification. Yeah. One day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is a faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, We will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Ah, yes, that is how we start this Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Al Martin. Boy, I still get chills every time I hear that I Have a Dream speech from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Man, oh, man. And I, you know, it's so crazy because every time this day comes around, you know, I always get an email from my fraternity brothers. I'm a member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. And, you know, me and my fraternity brothers have the privilege of calling Dr. King one of our brothers, literally, because he was also a member of AFIA. But on this day, we reflect on how far we have come as a nation, as a world. We still got a long way to go, I must say that. We still got some ways to go, but boy, oh boy, look at how far we've come. And Dr. King spearheading the movement, the civil rights movement back in the 60s. What a day it is, a day to reflect and really love one another. That's what we need more of, especially here in 2018. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Al Martin. 517-355-WKAR. 517-355-9527 is the number to call. Spartan fans, I know you are itching to get it off your chest. The loss to the Michigan Wolverines, it was an ugly one. On Saturday afternoon inside of the Breslin Center, you all are in a bit of a shock right now because it wasn't too long ago, just 15 days ago on January 1st, Michigan State was ranked numero uno in the country. And after they lost to Ohio State, they dropped down to number four. And now they lose to University of Michigan, and they will drop even further. If I had to predict, they'll probably be around, you know, 115. Well, I should say around 15 to 20 in my range. But, you know, who knows? Rankings don't mean anything in January. Let's be real here. But not a good loss. No loss is good, right? But especially when you lose to an unranked team, let alone your in-state rival. It's not a good one. We'll get to Michigan State and Michigan later on this hour. But first, I want to talk about the crazy weekend that was the NFL. As we saw the divisional weekend get put in the books, and we now look forward to the conference championships matchups that will take place this upcoming Sunday. It will be the Jacksonville Jaguars taking on the defending Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. That game will take place at 3 o'clock on Sunday on CBS. And then later on in the evening on Fox, you can catch at 6:40 p.m. the Minnesota Vikings taking on the Philadelphia Eagles. But to recap the divisional action, we haven't had this brother on in quite some time, and I'm excited to pick his brain about the wild weekend in the NFL. His name is Jared Bell, NFL columnist for USA Today Sports. He is an MSU alum as well. Jared Bell, welcome to the show. Jared, how you doing, my man?
Big Al, what's happening, dude?
Dude, I know you are one busy man around this time of the year. Have you caught your breath yet?
Just barely. And, you know, we've got another couple, 3 weeks to go in terms of intense action.
Right.
You know, it's been a weird NFL season overall, and weird in the sense that, you know, there's been so much focus on the things outside of football, and rightfully so. And what a day to even acknowledge that on MLK Day with the protest and the social activism in the NFL. I was talking to Malcolm Jenkins, the brother who plays safety for the Philadelphia Eagles. We were just talking last week about some of the things that he's done and, you know, being very essential to that players' coalition that is really trying to move the needle on some things, you know, beyond the protests. And having the league support has been, you know, very gratifying to him and some of the other players. Now, I think the NBA has been far more proactive, you know, in supporting its players with social causes and things of that nature.
Right.
But the NFL is kind of stepping up. So that has kind of defined a lot of this season. And you go back to September and October with the, you know, the Trump situation and how he's inserted himself into it. And it really took a lot of attention away from what was happening on the field. But these past couple of weeks, and especially this weekend, boy, all of the focus is on what's happening on the field. And that, my friend, has been crazy.
Yeah, it certainly has. And, you know, now that you brought it up, Jared, just real briefly, before we recap the crazy weekend that was, I mean, Jared, what first thoughts come to your mind when you think of Dr. King, when you think of this day, and the parallels that it does have to what we've seen this year in the NFL with the national anthem protest?
Yeah, I think the thing that really kind of resonates with me, Al, is the fact that, you know, we're in 2018 now, and a lot of the things that Dr. King talked about and hoped about with our nation and our society are, you know, still front and center issues. And, you know, there's been a lot of things that have happened in the years since the 60s and the civil rights movement and, you know, I Have a Dream speech and, you know, that time period, but, you know, so many things have remained the same. And what is so striking to me is, like, if I go back and look at documentaries and read books and articles and things that kind of come from that era, boy, some of the, it's amazing that, some of the same issues in terms of social justice and equality are still there, despite all of the gains in so many areas for so many people. And then we do have a comment last week from President Trump, just really disparaging people of color and people from certain nations. It just shows you, you know, how deep-rooted some of the hatred is in this country and has been for a long time, and it's just one of the issues, and it's a shame. But it just really makes me appreciate Dr. King and what he stood for even more.
Yeah, you can say that again, Jared. All right, let's shift now to the weekend that was in the NFL playoffs, the divisional round of NFL playoff action. And I have to start by, of course, bringing up this just insane in the membrane moment from last night's action out in Minnesota.
Yeah. I mean,
try to work the ball on the boundary. And steps into it. Pass is caught. Diggs! Sideline! Touchdown! Unbelievable! Vikings win it!
Yeah, so I wanted to play what I thought was a really great call from Joe Buck last night. I think he nailed it. But Jared, I believe you were out in actually Philadelphia covering the Falcons and Eagles game. So I assume you were watching that one on the tube. Am I right? Just want to confirm that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was writing about the Steelers game. Yeah, I was in Philadelphia on Saturday.
Right.
And was writing about the Steelers and, you know, how, you know, dramatic that was. And then all of us, you know, I'm watching the game as I'm writing, and then I finished writing by halftime, and so I got to watch the whole second half, and yeah, it was pretty incredible. I mean, kudos to the Saints for coming back from 17-0 to take the lead. It looked like they did everything right. It was the perfect comeback, and then you get that that one big play. And, you know, Kate, here's one thing. I told people this before the game. The thing that has really impressed me about Case Keenum, and I've been to about 3 Vikings games this year, is the fact that he has a really great knack for extending plays and making things happen with his feet. Now, he's not so much of a scrambler. I mean, Blake Bortles actually runs pretty good as a quarterback, and Keenum has some really good feet. And we saw it last night where he slipped out of probably a half dozen sacks, at least 3 for sure, that he was dead to rights.
Right.
Kept plays alive, including that one that Sean Payton reviewed, you know, late in the game where he threw it just before he landed on the turf. And so that's the thing about Case Keenum that really, you know, you could talk about his, you know, the throws he's made, and he's definitely a great rags to riches story this year. He's got a certain swagger about himself. But his ability to escape and keep plays alive has just been remarkable. So we saw it on that last play. And then, you know, Stephon Diggs, he's a baller too. You know, Stephon Diggs is a guy that, you know, Adam Thielen has really emerged as a great receiver for the Vikings, and he's a great story in his own right. But I think that Stephon Diggs has kind of got lost a little bit in the wash when it comes to the storytelling of things, and he was hurt earlier this season. I mean, he was playing through stuff and all of that. But for him, he was the guy. Last year, he was their big play receiver. You know, and the season wasn't anything like it is this year for them. But I think he's a guy that's kind of been a little bit forgotten as an emerging receiver. Well, you know, you saw what he did yesterday. And such poor technique by Marcus Williams, the Saints rookie DB, who's had a great season. He made a pick that, you know, helped with the comeback, no doubt about that. But the thing that just sticks out to me about the whole thing is what I've heard Bill Belichick talk about 1,000 times, and that's situational football. You have to know what the moment is, what you need to do in that moment to get the job done, and always have to be aware of that. And obviously, that got lost with Marcus Williams. But it also got lost with some other people. The game I was at in Philadelphia, it came down to one play, 4th and goal to 2.
Mm-hmm.
And that was poor situational football. But it started from the offensive coordinator, Steve Sarkisian, for calling that play to Julio Jones, that sprint out play, because, you know, things can happen. And they cut off half the field by calling that sprint out pass to Julio Jones. And, yeah, that's a good play most of the time. But what happens when he gets jammed at the line? He slips and falls on the turf like did happen. Then Matt Ryan has no other options. And so you put the season on the line with that one play without those options. Just horrible, you know, play calling, clock man, I mean, game management, whatever you want to call it. And then Pittsburgh had a case too. Mike Tomlin calling for that onside kick after they cut the lead to 7.
Yeah.
Had more than 2 minutes to go, 2:18 on the clock, 2 timeouts plus a 2-minute warning. Rather than kick it deep, he squibs it. It's a horrible onside kick in terms of there was no bounce or anything, no chance for a recovery.
Horrible execution. Yeah.
They just kind of gave Jacksonville a free field goal. I mean, they went like 8 or 9 yards and kicked a field goal. They didn't even make a first down. Made it a 10-point game, and the game was over. So just a horrible game management decision by Mike Tomlin.
And I want to get to Tomlin just a moment because, you know, I want to assess, you know, the play calling late in that game and also talk about Tomlin's future, because I'm hearing a lot right now, you know, out there about, you know, Tomlin getting very criticized heavily, and as he should have, because the execution was just so poor down the stretch of that game. But really briefly, going back to the Vikings and Saints game, I mean, you mentioned Marcus Williams blowing that tackle, the rook blowing that tackle. But what amazes me on that in that situation, Jared, is you talk about situational football, right, and how Bill Belichick, one of the greatest coaches of all time, stressing situational football. Mark is blowing that tackle. But the thing that gets me is that there was a timeout before that. I mean, the coaching staff also has to take some blame here, because if you have a timeout before that, you got to let your guys know, look, this is what needs to be executed. Let's make sure that we wrap up, Don't put him in the end zone. Heck, they don't have any more timeouts left. It's highly unlikely they can get a kicking unit on the field in that amount of time after a completed catch to possibly kick a field goal to win the thing. The coaching staff has to take some blame there for the Saints as well, right, Jarrett?
Oh, totally, totally. And you can even take that a step further, Al, in terms of the type of defensive scheme they were in. They should have been, like, pure prevent
right.
in terms of having some more DBs back there just in case somebody missed a tackle, okay? But they were trying to protect the sidelines, so they had all their DBs kind of blanketing the sidelines, trying to prevent Minnesota from getting a completion to get out of bounds, stop the clock, and then kick like a 50-yard field goal, which was possible, too. The guy just kicked a 53-yarder. But, yeah, I mean, we can slice it a lot of different ways, and I think that was one of the ways to slice it. But still, even with all that said, he did have a guy in position to make the play, and he didn't make it. And, you know, hey, tough break for the rookie, no doubt about it. And he would stand up in the locker room talking about it afterwards. But, yeah, that's what it comes down to. You have to make the play, and that's why situational football is so important. But, no, the coaches, Dennis Allen, the D coordinator, and crew, they don't get off the hook for this either.
Without a doubt. Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with NFL columnist for USA Today Sports, the great Jarrett Bell. Now, Jarrett, shifting our attention now, you know, as I noted, to the Pittsburgh Steelers game. I mean, that was very interesting as that one came down to the wire. And in my opinion, I really thought, Jarrett, that the Pittsburgh Steelers were kind of looking ahead in one.
Without,
I mean, you had Mike Mitchell, you know, guaranteeing a win over the New England Patriots when they still have a game to play this upcoming weekend, right? You look at that game, and you know, now you're, as I've noted, you're hearing this chatter about Mike Tomlin and his seat possibly getting warm here. What do you think of that chatter? And also, you know, a two-pronged question here. I saw that Big Ben also announced that he will be coming back in 2018.
Yeah, that's good for Ben. You know, I talked to Ben in training camp because you remember what happened last year where he wanted to take some time to think about his future and all of that.
Right,
and, you know, he totally admitted, not only to me but to a lot of people, that he's at the stage of his career where it's year to year. And the way he put it to me even in last summer was that he still wanted to play multiple years ahead, but he just owed it to himself, owed it to his family, to assess it year by year to see how he's doing physically. So I think the fact that he made that proclamation, you know, right after the game was done, A, to kind of, you know, squash the, you know, the panic or the rumors or the speculation, right, to not be that story going into the off season. So I think that was smart by him, because even if he decides a month from now I'm going to retire and he thinks about it in private and talks with his family, even if he did decide that, there's no harm in him coming out today saying I will be back. I think he'll fully follow through on that. But I'm just saying, even if he did change his mind, that it's not the worst thing, as opposed to going into the off season with this, you know, hanging over, you know, everybody's head. So, but it also tells me that physically he feels okay. So, you know, he didn't have any real big injuries this year. And you know, Ben, over the years, big guy, takes a lot of hits and stuff like that. You know, he's always kind of missed a game or two, at least in recent years, and not this year. So that was big. But in terms of Tomlin now, I think they'll stick with him. I mean, I think this is the noise. I think the Steelers ownership has a history of sticking with their coaches through thick and thin. But they're going to need to address some stuff. Because Tomlin, you talk about Mike Mitchell referring to the Patriots and Le'Veon Bell, our Spartan brother.
Right,
you know, comes
right.
Comes out right before the game, starts talking, you know, tweeting about round two, and it's going to be back-to-back weeks with round two. And and so that's something you never really hear out of New England. I mean, Bill Belichick, for as much as people don't like him, if you ever listen to him in his press conferences, he shows the utmost respect for whoever they're playing. They could be playing East Lansing High School, and Bill Belichick will talk them up like they are the next coming of the 67 Packers, right?
Right.
And he will
right.
highlight and underscore everything good about that team. And I read the transcript. Lewis Riddick, my former colleague at ESPN, he tweeted the transcript last week, and I retweeted it and I made a point. Yeah, nobody does, you know, respect for the opponents like Belichick, but it is true. And I read the transcript, and he talked about everything about the Titans that even the Titans coaches probably wouldn't come out and say. I mean, in terms of, you know, some of the players who dealt with issues and how they built their line and how the quarterback dealt with injuries and how the defense has rushed. I mean, he just broke it down. And, I mean, it was like a, you know, a press release for how great the Titans are. And that's what he does behind the scenes. And so when you go in the locker room as a reporter and you talk to the players, and it's, this is so consistent. It's been this way for years, man. You go in and you talk to them, and it'll, same thing will happen this week. You're asking about the Jags, and they will just be glowing in their praise. There's been a couple situations, like when they had, you know, they played the Jets and a couple years ago, and Wes Welker said some stuff. But by and large, they show the utmost respect, and it starts with Belichick. And so for Mike Tomlin to come out in his interview with Tony Dungy a few weeks ago talking about the Patriots, that was bad, man. That was just a bad move, you know, optically to do that. And it probably sent a signal to his players, too, even if it wasn't intentional and it was subliminally, that, okay, yeah, we got an eye on the Patriots. That's what we have to do. And, you know, too bad, because I was looking forward to the big rematch, too.
We all were. I was sitting there saying, okay, the Steelers and Patriots, must-see TV. I couldn't wait to see that matchup. But, hey, that's sports, right? And you look at the Patriots. You bring up the Patriots, Jared. I mean, they make it look just easy against the Tennessee Titans. How much of a chance do the Jacksonville Jaguars have to knock off the defending Super Bowl champs? Because it looks like, again, around this time of the year, it seems like Bill Belichick and the Patriots just start playing their best football. Gosh, they're so good. How much of a chance do you give Jacksonville?
I give them a puncher's chance, and the reason why is because of their defense. They've got one of the best defenses in the NFL, and if you look at the Final Four, look at all the great defenses that are there. Philadelphia's, Minnesota's, Jacksonville's, and even New England's defense, which is ranked 29th in yardage, but it's like fifth in scoring. Mm-hmm. And since week five, they're number one in scoring. So you can kind of slice that a little bit too. So the Patriots defense has played better than they had seven or eight sacks the other night.
Right.
So they have improved as the season's gone on. Now, that's been one of the, you know, the under the radar stories with the Patriots this year, I think, is just the fact that defense has gotten so much better. But Jacksonville having a chance, yes. And let me point out something, too, because they have a great defensive line. And like any quarterback, I mean, Tom Brady is, you know, subhuman, except for when he gets hit. Right. And he's human like everybody else. Now, it doesn't happen much. And he gets rid of the ball and he makes people pay for blitzes and all that kind of stuff. Right.
Right. Right.
But you think about how they lost those Super Bowls to the Giants and what the formula was against New England. It was beat them up front with your defensive line. And Jacksonville, probably as much as any defense in football, I guess you could say Philadelphia and Minnesota, if they were matched up, they might have the same opportunity too. But bottom line, they have a great defensive line. And Jacksonville has these ballers behind them too that can make the plays. So I give them a chance if they can do what the Giants did in those Super Bowls. And guess who's the VP of football operations with the Jags now?
It's Mr. Tom Coughlin, right?
He beat them twice in Super Bowl. So, you know, anything can happen. But I tell you what, you won't hear the Patriots talking about the Super Bowl this week, except for the fact that, hey, we're one win away. You won't hear the Patriots talking about overlooking Jacksonville. And last night in Jacksonville, when they flew back from Pittsburgh, Jalen Ramsey, love him dearly, young cornerback, he's talking about guarantees. He's already guaranteeing they're going to win the Super Bowl.
Oh, boy.
Like, dude, yeah, that's
pump
bad.
The brakes. So, pump the brakes, right, Jared?
Yeah. So I suspect that Bill Belichick played that clip of Jalen Ramsey in the team meeting this morning. It's a hunch.
As if they needed more motivation, right?
Yeah,
oh, boy.
Man.
All right, Jared, before we get you out of here, I got two more questions for you. And then last one going to be a kind of a local feel when it comes to the Detroit Lions coaching search. But who are we watching on February 4th out in Minneapolis come Super Bowl time?
Yeah. We're watching the Patriots and the Vikings.
Okay.
And I think that the Vikings can go into Philly and win because they have a better defense than Atlanta had. You know, Atlanta's defense is interesting because they can do some really good things at certain times, but they're not as consistent But Minnesota's defense is a cut above. And so I think Philadelphia's going to have a real tough time. But you know what? I've been counting the Eagles out for a long time. And
yeah.
They keep fooling me. But I'll take Case Keenum over Nick Foles. I don't know what Jeff Fisher's going to think about it, who he's picking. But I like Mike Zimmer's defense and the Vikings to get to the Super Bowl. So I think it'll be Vikings and Patriots, and I think the Patriots will – you know, find a way to win another one.
Oh, boy, I tell you, and that will be the first time, if that does hold to fruition, Jared, that will be the first time, of course, that a team will host a Super Bowl game. That'd be crazy, right?
Yeah, but let me just say this. I had the Steelers and the Saints going to the Super Bowl, so, you know, my expertise is very limited.
So we'll take that with a grain of salt, huh, Jared?
Yeah, please.
All right.
No betting allowed.
No betting allowed. All right, Jared, final question. It looks like, and by all accounts, in all reports right now, it looks like Matt Patricia is slated to become the next head coach for the Detroit Lions to replace Jim Caldwell. Does it look like, according to your sources, does it look like Matt is going to, you know, favor the Detroit Lions when it comes to when the season ends for the New England Patriots? Because we heard all last week that Matt Patricia was leaning towards going to the New York Giants. And what did you think of Jim Caldwell getting let go in the first place?
I didn't like that. I didn't. You know, we've seen it happen where, you know, teams will get to a certain level and then they feel like they have to have somebody else to get them over the hump. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I mean, the Eagles did it with Andy Reid and went out and got Chip Kelly and it didn't work. Years ago, the Bucks did it with Tony Dungy and it worked with John Gruden for a year or two.
Right.
And then it didn't work. So it's not surprising from that standpoint, because I think, you know, Jim Caldwell definitely got them to a level and you know, of consistency where they were in games and, hey, they were able to win in Green Bay and do some things under Jim Caldwell. But, you know, it was always something that you knew was possible because the new GM came in, Bob Quinn, from New England. So often in this business, people are, you know, trying to connect with the people that they feel comfortable with or they know they've worked with. We've seen that. That's why we're also hearing Josh McDaniels may be the new Tennessee Titans coach because the other guy from New England who became a GM, John Robinson, is the Titans general manager. So, that's what I think, you know, Matt Patricia has going for him. The thing about Matt Patricia, definitely more so than with Josh McDaniels, is, you know, this guy, I don't have a good sense of who he really is. Now, they talk about him behind the scenes, and you don't see him out in front like you do with some coordinators, right? There's some coordinators you see coming up the pike, and you get a sense of their personality, their persona, and you say, oh, yeah, you can project them. He's going to be a good leader, so on and so forth. But Patricia, in that Patriots system, has been so low-keyed. And of course, there's things behind the scenes that we just have no clue about. But, you know, I'm thinking, you know, Bill Belichick's got a lot to do with that defense and the success of the defense, too. But that's going to be real interesting to see how Matt Patricia is and how he handles, you know, the pressures of being a head coach and dealing with all the other stuff that comes with it. So I think it's going to happen because of the connection with Quinn, but I don't have a clue in terms of predicting it to be, you know, some big time success.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, the Lions, you know, struggles stem deeper than just a head coaching position, without a doubt. Jared Bell, NFL columnist for USA Today Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Jared Bell, JARRETT Bell. And I see you've got many pieces published over the weekend from the playoffs. And also, real quick, Jared, I saw your piece concerning the Oakland Raiders hire of John Gruden, and you believe that the Raiders should be punished due to not complying possibly with the Rooney Rule.
Yeah, not so much for hiring Gruden, but for, you know, making a mockery of the Rooney Rule with the process. And so when you interview the minority candidates after you've already struck a deal with Gruden, that's just plain wrong. And I think the fact that Mark Davis admitted it in public last week just really kind of sealed the case for the NFL to go on and discipline them. Now, over the course of time that we've had this Rooney Rule, only one person's been disciplined, old Matt Millen. And at that time, 2003, he was fined, like, I think $200,000 or something. And Paul Tagliabue was the commissioner back then, and Tagliabue promised if there are more violations after this, you know, the floor is going to be $500,000. So in my mind, I think that the NFL's got to go even higher than $500,000 to really send a message if they are indeed serious about the Rooney Rule, as they tell us, and also dock them a high draft pick, because nothing gets the attention of NFL teams like losing a draft pick. Because if you've given John Gruden $100 million and you're Mark Davis, the Raiders owners, you know, $1 million fine is, you know, like a cost of living tax, right?
Right,
it's
exactly.
Not going to, it's only a ripple when you talk about, it's 1% of $100 million. But if you dock them a draft pick, that's going to really send a message. But it is ironic, Al, that the Raiders are the team that's under this scrutiny, because throughout their history under Mark's father, Al Davis, they have been a beacon for diversity, equality, giving people opportunities. If it was not Art Shell, the first African-American coach in modern times, Tom Flores, two-time Super Bowl winner, Hispanic coach Amy Trask, one of the top female executives in the NFL for many years. So you can't really knock the Raiders, you know, institutionally for not being fair from a, you know, an equal opportunity standpoint, but we're talking about the Rooney Rule and really trying to, you know, maintain some credibility there. And the NFL's credibility on so many levels is way down there. it's bottom feeding. And so I think this is an opportunity for them to make a statement. But I don't know if they'll see it exactly the way I see it, but, you know, they are looking into the case.
No, but those are all fantastic points. All right, Jarrett Bell, NFL columnist for USA Today Sports. Jarrett, thank you so much for your time this afternoon, my man. Looking forward to reading your work after the championship series weekend.
Okay, my man. Thanks for having me, Al. Appreciate it.
Jarrett Bell, he's fantastic. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll get to our second guest for today's Current Sports, Kenya Abbott Jr., MSU grad and founder and host of Politickin', an audience-driven talk show and web-based platform rooted in social justice dialogue. A fitting conversation here on this 2018 MLK Day. That and so much more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We just finished up a chat with the great Jarrett Bell, NFL columnist for USA Today, also contributor to ESPN. Jarrett was one busy man this past weekend as the divisional round of the NFL playoffs is now in the books, and we just have one more weekend left until we know who will be playing in the Super Bowl come February 4th, a wild, wild weekend. I'm still trying to recover and pick up my jaw from watching that New Orleans Saints and Minnesota Vikings game as Case Keenum was able to find Stephon Diggs, a horrible tackle or lack thereof from Marcus Williams that led to the touchdown. Unbelievable game. Thanks so much to Jarrett for joining me on the show. And right now I want to get to our second guest for today's Current Sports. We're going to take a break from sports just for a moment. With it being MLK Day, I thought this would be a fitting guest to have on the show. She's been a dear friend of mine dating back to my college days at Michigan State University, and she is doing some remarkable things since graduating from MSU. She is an MSU grad and founder and host of Politickin', an audience-driven talk show and web-based platform rooted in social justice dialogue. To talk about what Politickin' is all about and so much more, we welcome Kenya Abbott Jr. to WKAR's Current Sports. Kenya, how you doing?
What's going on, Al? How are you?
This has been in the works for a while now, and again, it's MLK Day, and it's so fitting to have you a part of the show. And first off, Kenya, I just want to dive right into it and ask, you know, with it being Martin Luther King Jr. Day, I mean, what comes to mind when you think about Dr. King and what this day means to our nation?
I mean, I was listening to you guys earlier, too. It's so much around MLK Day. I get it from so many different angles, whether that's progress or just that we have a lot of work to be done. even looking at sports and things like that today and just looking at how people are, you know, standing up for their rights. There's a lot of movement. It's a lot of trends going on around people wanting to stand up for something. And I think that Martin Luther King is the type of guy that paved the way for that, for people to have a voice and for people to actually stand up and speak about the things that, you know, are having an impact on them every day. Yeah, so.
And Kenya, when you talk about your journey to what you're doing now and affecting change in the community. I mean, for our listeners that don't know you, this is your first time here on our show. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey to Michigan State and beyond and what you're currently doing now?
Yeah, so I started at MSU. I majored in journalism and sociology. So I have like this duality of life, right? Because between what journalists are taught and what sociologists are taught, we are taught to think very different ways. But being at MSU, you know, I was a part of Black Student Alliance. I actually was a part of silent protests that happened on campus. From there, you know, I was on multiple student organizations. I'm a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, which is a part of the Divine Nine, our brother Dr. Martin Luther King being an alpha man.
And happy late and then, Founders Day, Kenya. Your Founders Day was, what, 2 days ago?
Yesterday. Yeah, it was on
yesterday. Look at that. Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you know, just going from MSU and just being heavily involved on campus, I've seen the work of students. I actually was a part of the MLK Leadership Summit when I was there. I was one of the keynote speakers as a student. And so, you know, graduating, I joined nonprofit world, totally into education. I think education is our journey to speak our minds and to learn about the things that we actually need to speak about. And so now, you know, I'm working with Neighborhood Legal Services, which is a nonprofit organization. They have different departments, but I'm specifically with the education team, hoping to continue my time there. And I'm just trying to be a connector for people here in the city. I tend to support many events going on in the Detroit area. I was born in Detroit, raised a little bit in Oak Park, but I'm back here living in Detroit and working in Detroit and working with students specifically in Detroit because I think it's so important to empower youth, which is what politicking is all about. While we are a dialogue and, you know, panel kind of oriented interviews and things like that, my focus is the youth because I think that the youth are the ones that are going to lead the way and they're the ones who are counting on us to kind of help them to get the tools and resources that they need.
Yes, preach on, Kenya. And, you know, you mentioned all that you're involved in, and it's a laundry list, to say the least, without a doubt, Kenya. What kind of fueled your passion to give back, to affect change, and to, you know, have a hand on impacting our youth in a positive way? What fueled that for you?
You know, I wake up every day and say, what happened?
Right.
I get here. But I think ultimately, I think it's the family. I think that a lot of what drives us, even if we don't get it, we get those seeds at home. And I think that just growing up, you know, my grandmother was politically involved. My parents, you know, were in the union. Just knowing these type of things, these are people who are workers. And these are people who are standing up that didn't always have the voice, but created the voice. And so with that, I think a lot of it is just driven through, you know, my family dynamic. But not only that, actually living and working in these spaces, you know, hey, I can use the NFL protest as an example. You know, a lot of us get on them for not wanting to protest. And I'm one of those people who may have those issues. But when we look at it, that's a livelihood. And a lot of us, we deal with these oppressions or these institutional, you know, racism or institutionalization of systems every day. And so while we're looking at them, what are we standing up for in the office? You know, corporate America is just about equivalent. And so when you start to think about it, you know, just being in these spaces, it shows you that things aren't, you know, how it should be. We don't live in an ideal world, I would say. And so I think that just seeing that and then being with young people and seeing the opportunities that they, you know, that they have, that they may pass up on or may not know about, I think those are the things that kind of wanting to be that filter and wanting to be that help, you know, to encourage and empower because the world can be anything you want it to be. but you have to know that you can do it.
Right. And Kenya, before I dive into politics and your show and really dive into what kind of separates it from other talk shows out there that are, you know, trying to affect change and talk about social injustice here in America and just here in our world. I do want to talk about your time here at Michigan State because you mentioned, you know, how you were involved in trying to affect change here on the campus of Michigan State and how you were a part of certain protests. How would you describe the health of race relations here on the campus of Michigan State University? And kind of also talk about those protests that you were involved in and what led to those protests even taking place here at MSU.
Okay, so just quickly, what kind of fueled it. So the year that I was on Black Student Alliance, it just was a different feeling for me. We had a very close-knit e-board, which was like a family. And I think all of us kind of had this idea of just wanting to be, to bring a different presence and energy that our organization had lacked, you know, at least from when I was there. And so just, you know, the year happened, we were kind of on the board. We were really doing a lot ahead of time. And so I want to say that there was a letter or sign that was found on a resident's door. It said, "No niggers, please," or something of that matter. And it kind of just fueled a fire. And it literally was like we weren't thinking we were going into this type of culture for the year. We didn't, you know, you can't plan those type of things. They just happen. But we were already so energized and just wanting to evoke change within the culture of our community anyway. It kind of just all went together. So through that, you know, we had a few collaborations and alliances with some of the other core members, which is a Council of Racial and Ethnic Groups on the campus. And a lot of us were having a lot of feelings. You know, we were doing town hall meetings. I want to say we had hundreds of students show up, packed room. And it just really fueled a fire. And we seen the need for activism on campus. And it was crazy because we had all of these people that were speaking about, you know, we're post-racial. You know, this is a time, what, 2011, you know, Barack Obama's in office. Mm-hmm. People are thinking we're past this. But even with that, there was a need because the students responded and showed that there was a need, right? And so that's kind of how it fueled. And then what else did you want answered with that?
The health of race relations here at Michigan State. Is it getting better? And how did you assess it when you were on campus?
Mm-hmm. And so after the silent protests and things like that, you know, we got a lot of backlash. And so with that, we ended up having all of these meetings and things like that with administration. And I would say that health relations then, as far as race relations goes on campus, there was a clear divide. There was a clear divide, one, because the lack thereof of this type of conversation happening. We didn't see this a lot on campus during that time. I mean, you might have had little pockets of things. I mean, we had intercultural aid. You know, some of those little band-aids is what I like to call them that kind of helped the culture. But we never were really engaging in dialogue that was open and honest about what was happening on campus. And I think that those protests and the things that were going on led to that. And so then now I look back, though, because now I'm an alum. So I try to stay involved, and I try to talk to the young folks all the time and just to see what's going on. One thing that I will say that is healthy on the MSU's campus currently is that there has been a creation or a cohesion of community that has been built specifically within the Black culture. I know that when I was there, one of the things I was really adamant on was creating an intergenerational conversation, one in which I brought together faculty, staff, graduate students, undergrad students at the university where we could come to the table and speak to issues. Because one thing that I always believe is that it takes a village. It's not really about what's happening at that time, because 9 times out of 10, if you read a book, historically something like this has already happened. But it's about how can we begin to create a sense of community that we can start to tackle these problems and actually have a better sense of community just within ourselves. And I think with that, you're starting to see that. I know another thing that has improved within the Black community at MSU is that we have so many students minoring in African American, African studies. I remember when I was there, that wasn't even a minor. It was a specialization. And a lot of students had no idea about it. Another department that I was able to have, you know, an interest or be a part of. And it's those types of things that create community and culture. And so with that, you're starting to see more coalition across CORS groups, across COPS groups, which is the community of progressive students. You have these things happening, but I definitely believe that those protests and, you know, those people speaking out, because I want to say 2 years following that, you had the sit-ins in the library. You know what I'm saying? So you had all of this stuff happening, but I feel like the road of activism was ignited during 2011.
Kenya Abbott Jr., Michigan State grad, founder and host of Politicking, an audience-driven talk show and web-based platform rooted in social justice dialogue. Kenya, we just have 5 minutes left, but I want you to talk about what politicking is. How did you found it, and what makes it different from other shows out there?
Right. And so politicking has been in the works. Of course, like I said, you know, I'm a journalist. I see you in that building as well, Al, back in our day.
Right, all the time. I still live here.
Exactly, exactly. And it's just so funny because back then, you know, I knew that I love the work of journalism, but I'm so not traditional with it, right? I never could see myself actually in a newsroom or anything like that. But I knew that I had something that I wanted to talk about. And so, you know, having my social background and then also being ignited into the African-American African Studies program, I just started to learn so much. And I actually started to do more events where, you know, I was listening to what people had to say. And I'm like, we really need to bring people to the table, regular people, to talk about issues that matter to us. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, it was just like, you know, politicking. And it really became this thing that, if I have the platform to kind of moderate or guide these conversations in a healthy way, I can bring people to the table that don't have always the same ideas, that may have different points of view. And I think that's kind of what drives and makes politics different, is that I want to talk about social justice, but I'm not scared to talk about social justice with someone who may not agree with everything that I say. And so I bring people to my show with different points of view, different ideas, and particularly youth. Because at the end of the day, a lot of these issues that we're all fighting for, they're going to fall in the laps of young people. And so just being able to bring together, you know, this intergenerational conversation that can ignite ideas. And it's also bringing people in this space that are doing this work on their own.
Right.
You know, people
right.
who are founding nonprofit organizations, working in the world of education, working in these social spaces that need change. I want us all to be able to talk about it. And so that's what drove me to politicking. And I think what makes it different is that I want to talk to the people that we usually aren't listening to.
Right, right. Very true. Well, Kenya, I tell you what, you're doing a remarkable job. Again, Kenya Abbott Jr., MSU grad, founder and host of Politicking. That is P-O-L-I-T-I-C-K. E-N. You can find out more information at politicking.org. We'll also be sure to post it on our social media pages when we post the podcast version of this broadcast later on this afternoon. Kenya, thank you so much. Keep up the outstanding work. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me, Al. Appreciate it.
Kenya Abbott Jr., she's one of a kind. All right, folks. Well, on tomorrow's Current Sports, we'll get back to your regularly scheduled programming, and we will dive into the Michigan State men's basketball loss to the University of Michigan. A lot of questions that need to be answered, a lot of wrinkles that need to be ironed out when it comes to Tom Izzo's troops. You don't want to miss tomorrow's show. It's going to be a hot one. But until then, happy MLK Day. Have a fantastic Monday afternoon. And as always, be easy, people.